morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe hopes UN vaccines can contain a cholera outbreak.
The vaccination campaign is expected to start from the 29th of January in phased approach to the hot spots. This is because the doses are not enough to cover the whole country.
Zimbabwe's main opposition leader says an escalated and concerted approach is needed to deal with the cholera epidemic. Liberian President Joseph Boakai named some cabinet ministers. Uganda's government reacts to an Oscar Award nomination for a documentary on opposition leader Bobi Wine. ADF rebels kill 5 civilians in eastern DR Congo.
As Operation Shuja, which is composed by UPDF, Ugandan Army, and FRDC, is fighting against ADF in the forest, and now ADF is thinking about to attack the city of Beni.
And the stage is set for the start of the round of 16 competition at the Africa Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwean health authorities battling a cholera outbreak that has infected about 20,000 people and killed more than 370 say they hope donated vaccines will ease the spreading waterborne disease now in 60 of the country's 64 districts. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwean Health Minister Douglas Mumbishora Wednesday told reporters in Harare that the country had recorded 20,121 suspected cholera cases and 376 deaths, 6 of them since Tuesday. He said the World Health Organization and the United Nations Children's Fund had secured 2.3 million cholera vaccines for the country and nearly 900,000 doses to be administered next week.
The vaccination campaign is expected to start from the 29th of January in phased approach to the hot spots. This is because the doses are not enough to cover the whole country and then roll on to the other affected districts as we receive more vaccines. The challenge is that there is a shortage of the vaccine in the world because cholera is not in Zimbabwe alone.
Mumbishora said 37 African countries had confirmed cases of cholera. The WHO's Africa office did not confirm the number Wednesday. In a statement to VOA, Dr. Paul Ngwakum, regional health advisor for UNICEF in Eastern and Southern Africa, said the cholera outbreak remains a serious public health concern and continues to impact children's lives in the region. An unprecedented surge in cholera cases is being recorded in the region due to many factors, including extreme climatic events such as droughts, cyclones, and flooding. With porous borders and high population movements, cholera is spreading fast. Now Mumbishora is urging Zimbabweans to accept the cholera vaccine.
This is not a new vaccine, and it has been used all over the world. The only reason why we don't have it enough is because it's manufactured on demand. Therefore, it's the same vaccine. It's very, very safe. We have not received any reports of any adverse effects in our past use of it. I've had the cholera vaccine before, years ago. Nothing to worry about.
Dr. Prosper Chonzi, Zimbabwe's Director of Health Services, says now that there is vaccine, people must not ease up on hygienic practices. Chons is not happy that Harare is still full of vendors selling fruits and vegetables.
I think the general economy is playing against us. We have been doing this hide-and-seek chase after vendors. It has not been working. If you buy food from uninspected premises, the chances of you contracting not only cholera, but typhoid, dysentery, and other diarrheal diseases are very high.
Zimbabwe's moribund economy is forcing citizens to venture into vending as a source of income, as jobs are hard to come by, with some estimates putting unemployment rate at about 85%. Experts say that is making the fight against a cholera outbreak difficult, with the country receiving 1,000 new cases every week since the beginning of the year, according to the United Nations. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, the CCC, says the country needs an escalated and concerted approach to deal with the latest cholera epidemic. Nelson Chamisa's comments come almost a week after President Emmerson Mnangagwa's spokesperson, George Charamba, suggested that the president invoke executive powers and take over the Harare City Council, which is led by an opposition mayor. Chamisa's CCC has been experiencing internal strife since August general elections. Chamisa tells me that fighting cholera should not be about scoring cheap political points. Rather, he says, it requires responsible leadership.
Well, I must say that it's an extremely concerning development in Zimbabwe. We would have liked to see a much more concerted effort by government, a much more concerted effort by authorities to deal with the scourge of cholera. Zimbabwe seems an epicenter of the problem within the region, and we need a thorough, radical, and comprehensive approach. We are aging citizens. We are aging an inclusive, collective approach, and also availing of information as a way of dealing with the challenges that the country is facing. And we need an escalated approach.
I read an article, Mr. Chamisa, of the presidential advisor Charamba saying that President Mnangagwa, perhaps he should take over your party because of the mayor of Harare is from your party and he's not managing the cholera situation properly.
Well, that is precisely the problem that we are facing. People who politicize serious pandemics. You can't look at politics in the area of pandemics like COVID, like cholera. This is a national disaster on human life, and we cannot afford to play games, political games for that matter, with such a serious issue. The fact that you have a presidential advisor who is saying that tells you that something is fundamentally wrong. Our biggest focus is a cholera pandemic. It's not about finger pointing. It's not about apportioning blame. It's not about point scoring. It's about really scoring points against this disease. And to do so, we need every citizen. We need everyone. We need leadership of the collective. And we need leadership from government. And we need information to also be provided by government so that citizens are fully equipped on how to deal with this scourge. And that is where we must be going. This whole thing of saying the city is managed by the opposition is neither here nor there. Cholera knows no political party. Cholera does not attack a particular political party grouping, knows no political party color. And therefore, we need responsible leaders, accountable leaders, who are able to deal with this problem. This is not a local authority issue. This is not a city of our issue. It's a national emergency issue. Unless if they're abrogating the responsibility and they're pointing fingers at others, they must remember that the majority of their fingers are actually pointing at themselves.
May I ask you, Mr. Chamisa, particularly there's a February 3rd by-election coming up, and last month, your party officials did not participate or were denied the permission to participate in the last by-election. Well, what is your plan, sir?
Well, do you want me to announce and broadcast our plan? You know that your audience does include ZANU-PF. So do you want us to whisper in the ear of ZANU-PF? We have a plan. And that plan is going to be unveiled to the appropriate audience, and you will know at the appropriate time.
Can you respond? Because I spoke to a Zimbabwe analyst who said that the reason Shabangu was able to do this to your CCC is because there's a lack of structures within this CCC.
Now, I don't have time for nonsense. Unfortunately, I would have loved to give you a response. But whenever I'm approached with such nonsense, I choose to defer. Let's have the next question.
So are you saying that your party will participate, will be allowed to participate in the by-election February 3rd?
Unfortunately, you're asking the wrong question to the wrong person. This can be addressed by ZANU-PF, because those are the ones who are on the rampage and onslaught to attack and marginalize the citizens. And what you need to ask is Mr. Mnangagwa. Unfortunately, I'm Nelson, not Emerson.
Nelson Chamisa is the leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition Citizens Coalition for Change. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, an attack by the Allied Democratic Forces, the ADF rebels, on the territory of Beni in North Kivu province has killed five civilians, According to the French news agency, the ADF is a Uganda Muslim Majority Rebel coalition operating in eastern Congo. For more on the ADF attack, I spoke with reporter Al-Katanti Sibiti Jaffa in the eastern democratic city of Goma.
Locals of Mavivi, a neighborhood north of Beni, were attacked by ADF last night. In this attack, five people were being killed, many was injured. And this morning, rescue teams were looking for bodies in streets and in the bush.
It has been some time now since an attack on Beni. Why do you think the ADF decided now to attack the city?
I think the reason why ADF attacked the city of Beni after many times, because the last attack in the city of Beni had been more than 1 year ago. ADF was operating in the region of Beni, but not inside the city of Beni. But now, as Operation Shuja, which is composed by UPDF, Ugandan Army, and FRDC, is fighting against ADF in the forest, and now ADF is thinking about to attack the city of Beni, as the forest is so dangerous for them. Fortunately for them, it looks that even the city is now protected. And now we can say that ADF is in danger as they are losing a lot of fighters in the forest, and they also lost some fighters when attacking Beni.
So what's been the reaction of the DRC army, or the authorities in the region?
The reaction of DRC armed forces was instantaneously, because troops close to the city, as it was in the city of Beni, responded directly on the ADF, and they succeeded to neutralize three rebels among those who attacked. And this is the reason why the attack didn't kill a lot of people. You know that when ADF attacked somewhere without protection, they killed dozens of people, but this time they only killed five people. What is not nothing, but it's a few number than what we have to record every time when ADF attack is on. Casualties are receiving medical treatment in hospital in Beni. You know, after terrorist attack, many people must be injured. And some of them had also a mental trauma because they saw people being killed or being injured. And all of them are getting care at Beni Hospital.
That was reporter Jaffa Al-Katanti speaking with us from the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, capital Goma. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, January 25th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A documentary entitled Bobby Wine, the People's President, about Uganda's singer-turned-politician Robert Chakulain Setamu, popularly known as Bobby Wine, is one of four nominated for the 2024 Oscar Awards. The Ugandan opposition leader says he is very humbled to see their country's story making it to such a huge global platform. But Uganda Foreign Minister Henry Okello Oyem tells viewers Douglas Umpuga that Western governments support people who are against elected and legal institutions, and that even the most misleading of information is accepted as truth.
My only comment is this, that Western countries are so gullible to everything and anything that anybody that talks negatively against the government of the day institution. And the government, Western countries spend more time trying to support people who are against elected or the legal institutions of the day. And whatever those groups tell Western governments, even the worst of lies, even the most misleading of information, the Western countries and their viewers are so gullible to these stories that, you know, their legs go waxy and wobbly to the, such stories. So I wish him all the very best. But for us in Uganda, the facts speak for itself. And Uganda, and in spite of all that they throw at Uganda, which are misleading, Uganda has managed to prove them wrong. So I've not watched that movie that has been nominated for, but it will not have any impact on this government. If anybody thought it would have an impact on this government, they're misplaced.
And he says he's now managed to reach an international audience and to what he calls expose what is undemocratic situation in the country. How will the government counter that?
By action. By action. We have proven over and over again. Over the last 1 week, we've had the most successful back-to-back summits that could be held in any part of Africa. It was fully attended beyond our wildest imagination by delegations coming from all over the world. Yet, less than a month ago, there were allegations of and travel advices being issued by Western governments that tourists and investors should not come to Uganda because there's violence in Uganda, there's terrorism in Uganda, and they'll be injured in Uganda. Yet, that has been disproved beyond doubt that it was all lies, fabricated and then misleading, because the attendance of the international community at this summit was beyond our imagination.
That was Uganda Foreign Minister Henry Okello Oyam. He spoke by phone from Kampala with viewers Douglas Umpuga. Liberian President Joseph Boakai has begun naming his cabinet following his inauguration on Monday, January 22nd. A press release from the president's office late Wednesday said Boakai nominated 7 cabinet ministers pending Senate confirmation, including a female, Cyril Beslow Nyanti, for foreign minister. Rodney Steer is publisher and editor-in-chief of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. He tells me some of the president's cabinet nominations have so far been met with dissatisfaction by some ruling Unity Party members.
Well, James, these appointments came on a day when there was a lot of controversy in the country. There was some infighting within the Unity Party regarding the second batch of appointments. There were concerns that the party since were not being consulted about the appointments that came the second time. And some of the people didn't get the blessings of some of the partisans, especially the young ones. And so the names that were put up early in the day, Wednesday, did not make it to the final listing that came out late last night. As a result, people are wondering whether the president is under pressure from his partisans and from his supporters regarding the cabinet listing he's been putting out.
So let's talk about the latest appointment. I see that he has nominated his foreign minister. What can you tell us about these latest appointments?
Well, the most controversial is the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Madam Cyril Nyanti Beslow. The last couple of days, there was some within the party, the Unity Party, who were saying that she has some issues with her education credentials. She made a post on social media on Tuesday saying that she was ready to fight for her position in the Senate at confirmation hearing. And we're looking to see how the Senate will respond to what she posted and what the education credentials had to say. The other nominees that came up was Amin Modad. He's a businessman in Liberia. He owns a hotel, Bellacasa Hotel, and other businesses around the country. He's the former chairman of the Unity Party. And so he's one of those who's been in the limelight for some time for that position. And so two of the names that came up was the Minister of Health and Education. Those two names were kind of new to the Liberian community. So we're looking to see how that plays out also. They also named the head of the Drug Enforcement Agency, Abraham Kumar. He's a former deputy police director for operations. He was expected to be appointed as police chief, inspector general of police, but apparently he has settled for the Drug Enforcement Agency. As you know, James, drugs played a major role in Liberia's last 6 years. There were a lot of drug trafficking situations. There were apprehension of drugs at the port of Monrovia and other, at the airport also. So the key position here will be interesting to see how the Senate confirmation hearing deals with Mr. Kuma as he takes on this position. And so that's what's been happening in the last 24 hours.
Rodney, thank you so much again for joining us.
Thank you, James.
Rodney C. is the editor-in-chief and publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. He was speaking with us from the Liberian capital, Monrovia. At the Africa Cup of Nations tournament in Ivory Coast, the stage is set for the beginning of the knockout round of 16 on Saturday. Viewers Mugbio Yabaro, who is covering AFCON in Abidjan, says there were some exciting final group stage games yesterday, Wednesday.
So the round of 16 now just concluded. The very last games of last night were integral for the host nation, Ivory Coast, to be able to make it through. The Ivorians were watching carefully as Morocco defeated Zambia 1-0, and they were the last third-place team to make it through. So at the moment, Senegal will be Ivory Coast's first test. So it's like, hey, we finally made it to the next round, but we face the defending champions who have been excellent in the tournament. So it's kind of bittersweet a little bit, James.
So if there's anything like God can answer prayers, I think for Ivory Coast, whoever prayed, God answered their prayers.
100%, absolutely. I think the entire city, the entire country was together holding their breath as Morocco had that 1-0 lead against Zambia, just waiting and waiting until the final whistle. And everybody was a Moroccan fan last night in Ivory Coast.
So as we move to the round of 16, which I think starts on Saturday, who is the favorite now going forward? Because it seems to me some of the favorite teams coming in, some of them have been defeated.
Absolutely. You make a very great point there. I would still think that in that introductory matchup between Senegal and Ivory Coast, there will be two heavyweights in the region because there's a ton of Senegalese fans here to support their team, as well as the Ivorians here. And they'll be playing on Monday, January 29th. Outside of that, I would say that Cape Verde has a relatively big group of supporters here, small island country. No one really expected much from them coming out of their group B, but they finished at the top of their group without being defeated. They won twice and got a draw in their last game. So Cape Verde is another one that people will be watching, as well as Nigeria. Nigeria and Cameroon will have a huge clash as well. So yeah, Saturday, January 27th, Nigeria versus Cameroon.
So
as you can hear, James, the fans are still ecstatic about their team making it through last night. It's fandom and excitement all over Abidjan.
Before I let you go, I think what about Egypt? I think Egypt probably is limping going into the round of 16.
Absolutely. Egypt is one of those teams where you would have expected them to have a better performance in the group phase. A ton of analysts were predicting that they finished the group at the top. But unfortunately for them, they had the exact same result in all three games, which were draws. Three draws they were able to make it through simply because their group was also struggling with Ghana and Mozambique only having 2 points. So they barely made it through. We'll see what they do in the knockout phase.
That's viewers Mugbio Yabaro at the Africa Cup of Nations in the Ivorian capital, Abidjan. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, on a visit to Africa Monday, called on Congress to overcome an impasse and reauthorize a major two-decade plan against HIV/AIDS, saying lives were at stake. The French news agency AFP said Blinken met Wednesday in Lagos, Nigeria, with doctors at the Nigerian Institute of Medical Research, which has been at the forefront of anti-AIDS programs in Africa's most populous country. The institute has been supported by PEPFAR, the massive investment in anti-AIDS treatment launched in 2003 that U.S. officials credit with saving 25 million lives, mostly in Africa. And that's it for this Thursday, January 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barty in Washington, saying, have a great day and please be safe whatever you do.